As Jeff said, I'm going to be talking about a case crossover analysis looking at condom use and HSV2 acquisition. Before I get started, I want to acknowledge all the collaborators on this, especially my co-authors. Amalia Margaret is our biostatistician and has been my primary partner in crime on this endeavor. Emily Martin is the person we have to thank for our data, and Anna Wald has been the guiding force behind the whole endeavor. So why are we interested in this question? I'm sure we're all pretty convinced that condoms are an important prevention tool in the world of STDs. Unfortunately, the effectiveness of condoms against HSV2 transmission is not as well established as it is for some other STIs, like HIV, for example. And there's two reasons for this. The first is purely biological, and that's that condoms probably don't work as well in preventing HSV2 transmission as they do in preventing the transmission of diseases like HIV, for example. The other reasons fall under the umbrella of limitations of previous research. So previous research has been limited in some cases by small samples, in other cases by the use of prevalent as opposed to incident infections. And of course, as we always have this issue in STD research, there's the issue of unmeasured and unknown confounders. And that's simply to say that people who use condoms are different than those who don't use condoms in other ways. So our hope was to be able to conduct a study that addressed these issues, but primarily we were interested in seeing if we could address this issue of confounding. And to do this, we looked towards the case crossover design. So some of you may be familiar with this design, but for those of you who aren't, I'm going to spend a couple of minutes talking about it. The canonical example of a case crossover study is looking at the effect of cell phone use on the risk of a car accident. So in a classic epidemiology study, we would do, you know, a case control study, and we would find a group of car people who had accidents and a group of people who did not have accidents, and we would compare their exposure. That is, we'd compare their cell phone use while driving. In a case crossover design, however, we're not interested in those who never had the accident. We're just going to find people who had an accident. For each of those people, we're going to compare their cell phone use at the time of the event to their cell phone use at some other comparable time. So in this example here, this person is driving to work at noon today. Lucky for them, they get to sleep in. So they're driving to work at noon today and they get into an accident. And we're gonna ask them about their cell phone use at that time. And then we're also gonna ask them about their cell phone use when they were driving to work at noon yesterday and compare those. So fundamentally, what you need to understand about this design is that cases, people serve as their own controls. And the beauty of this is that people are perfectly matched on things that don't change over the course of the study. So you don't need to worry about confounding by age or gender or ethnicity or even things like risk aversion that we really can't normally quantify or adjust for. In 2005, Warner et al. Published a study in the American Journal of Epidemiology, and they used a case crossover analysis to look at condom effectiveness with gonorrhea and chlamydia. And they did two analyses on the same data set. One analysis was a more traditional cohort analysis, and the other was a case crossover analysis. And I've real briefly summarized the results here. And what's important to note is that the effect measure that they found in the case crossover analysis was more than twice as powerful as what they found in the cohort analysis. So with all this in mind, we set out to see if we could evaluate the effect of condom use on HSV2 transmission, with the hope that we could minimize confounding using the case crossover design. I mentioned earlier that our data came from Emily Martin. Emily pooled data from six earlier prospective studies. And these were studies that enrolled people who were HSV2 negative, followed them over time, and at each follow-up visit, they collected self-reported information on sexual activity and on condom use. And they also tested to determine if the person had acquired HSV2. And all HSV2 acquisitions were confirmed either by serology or culture. So for each of these people, each person who acquired, what we had to do is we had to determine which of these follow-up visits are case visits and which were control visits. So if we look at this timeline at the bottom, you'll see the X at the right-hand side, and that's the point of detection. And using the natural history of a herpes infection, we could go back from the time of detection to get some idea as to when they acquired. Now, obviously, we can't identify the act or the day or even the week that they acquired, but we can identify a period of likely acquisition. So on this timeline, we could say that shaded bar, the red bar, they probably acquired someplace in that red bar if they were detected at the point where the X is. So any visit that corresponds with the area of the red bar is going to be considered a case visit, and all prior visits in the area of the blue bar are going to be considered control visits, and we're going to compare their exposures during these two periods. So as with Warner, we did two analyses. We did a case crossover analysis, and this is our primary analysis. And the exposures that we modeled were two continuous variables, the number of protected acts and the number of unprotected acts. We didn't need any covariates. Like I said, people serve as their own control, so we didn't need to adjust for age or anything like that. We did a basic paired analysis. We also used conditional logistic regression. And to give us some means of making an apples-to-apples comparison to determine how well this method works, we also did an analysis using the full cohort. We modeled the same exposure variables, the number of protected acts and the number of unprotected acts. And here we did adjust for age, gender, and ethnicity. And we analyzed this using logistic regression with GEE. So we started off with about 5,400 people. The vast majority did not acquire, so 5,000 were excluded from this study because we had no case period for them. Another 188 acquired by their first visit, and we therefore had no control visit for them, so they were excluded as well. And we excluded another 40 because of missing or unreliable data, which left us with 191 people. It may not sound like a huge number, but keep in mind these are all acquisitions, which makes it a fairly substantial sample. The median age was 25 years, pretty even split between male and female, majority white but a very large number of African Americans, primarily heterosexual with a median of 316 days in the study and a median of 4 visits per person. So this is the paired analysis, and what we've done here is for each individual, we've looked at all their condom use over all of their control visits and their condom use all over all of their case visits, and we've categorized it as never, sometimes, or always. And we can see here that the folks who fall along the white diagonal cells are people whose category of condom use didn't change between the case and control visits, and they fundamentally offer us no real information. The people who are interesting are the folks in the orange and the blue cells. So the people in the orange cells are people who used condoms less frequently around the time they acquired. The people in the blue cells are people who used condoms more frequently around the time they acquired. So if we're right and condoms offer some protection, we would expect to see more people in the orange cells, and clearly that's the case. There's a much larger number of people in the orange than in the blue cells. And the difference here is significant with a p-value of less than 0.001. So here's the real meat of the analysis, and this is the results of the conditional logistic regression. These are odds ratios for each additional act. And they look very tiny, but keep in mind these are continuous variables, and as you have a lifetime of acts, these numbers can accumulate pretty rapidly. So there's strange odds ratios to interpret, so I'm gonna kind of walk you through them. For unprotected acts, what we're seeing is about a 3.6% increase in the risk of acquisition associated with each additional unprotected act. And that's a significant increase in risk with a p-value of less than 0.001. For protected acts, however, we're only seeing a 0.8% increase in the risk, and that's not a significant increase in risk. So there's two ways we can interpret this data. The first is basically how I just did interpret it, and that's to say we're seeing a significant increase in risk with unprotected acts, but we're not seeing a significant increase in risk with protected acts. The other way, which I think is probably more interesting and more telling, is to actually compare these odds ratios and say, are they different? And if you compare these odds ratios, what you see is that the increase in odds associated with unprotected acts is significantly greater than the increase in odds associated with protected acts, and the p-value there is 0.029. So I mentioned earlier that we did a cohort analysis to make some sort of comparison, and I want to bring those numbers in here. In the left column, you'll see the numbers I just presented on the previous slide for the case crossover analysis, and on the right-hand side, you'll see the corresponding numbers from the cohort analysis. And what's important to note here is that for both unprotected and protected acts, the case crossover analysis is yielding larger odds ratios. And if our suspicion is that confounding is biasing the odds ratios towards zero, which that is our suspicion, then this suggests that the case crossover analysis is doing a better job of handling confounding. So what's the take-home message? What's important here? Obviously, the most important take-home message is that the analysis suggests that condoms do offer significant protection against HSV2. The other thing that's important to note is that the case crossover analysis yielded stronger effect measures, and this is the same thing that Warner found in his study. And this suggests that the case crossover analysis is doing a better job of controlling confounding. And it also suggests that this is a design that has utility for those of us in STI research who deal with issues of confounding all the time. So So with that, I thank you for your time and be happy to answer any questions. Right, so the question is, if we were to stratify the paired analysis by gender, how would it work out? You know, we didn't actually stratify the paired analysis by gender. We did try the conditional logistic regression model stratified by gender, and it made no difference. The odds ratios were nearly identical for both men and women. We also tried an interaction by gender in that model, and the interaction was not significant. So it looks like the effect is similar for both men and women.
I'm curious how you accounted for time or factors associated with time, because the difference with HSV2s is it's a lifelong infection. By definition, all of your control periods come before your case periods, whereas in Lee Warner's analysis, because it's treatable bacterial infections, which is what he looked at, mm-hmm. the cases and control periods could occur at any time frame. And so things like, you know, when you acquire a new sex partner, mm-hmm. if your risk of acquisition is highest when you first get a new sex partner, in the earlier time period, there may be kind of like a washout because, you know, there are people that already got infected and weren't included in the analysis. But a new partner occurring later over the time of the cohort would give you an increased risk. So I'm curious how you think that might bias things and if there anything you can do to control for it.
So the question has to do with whether time and the introduction of new partners may have biased the results in some way. We had information on the number of sexual partners and the number of new sexual partners reported at each visit, and we tried adjusting for both of those, and neither made a difference whatsoever. We were actually really surprised because we thought that was going to be an issue as well. But adjusting for the number of new partners actually had no effect on the analysis. All right. Thanks for your time.